Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'd like to thank Henry May way down in Mississippi. He's our technical producer tonight, always does an outstanding job. And you are welcome, Henry. And he'll be monitoring the chat room, so if there are any calls tonight, we'll be more than happy to take those calls, though I know that tonight's guest is going to be it's going to be a good one, folks, from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In a few moments, we'll be start our discussion with Stephen Chase and his work at the National Conservation Training Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And, of course, as always, bringing us the Wild World News, Dr. Henry Day.
Good evening, Doc.
Well, I'm good. We need to build an ark here in Indiana because all it's done for the last, it seems like most of the spring is rain. And it's raining right now, and, of course, we're right on the outskirts. I don't know if outskirts is the right word of from the raging metropolis of Indianapolis. And, of course, whenever anyone thinks of Indianapolis beside all the events that they host with basketball, the NCAA, but we always think of the Indianapolis 500, and those cars are right now trying to squeeze in time so they can get up to speed and be prepared for the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500. That will be happening here in just a few days, so the whole city is excited about that. But we'd like to start off, as always, tonight, everybody, for our listeners in Ireland, New Zealand, England, and way down in Alabama, big hello to Slade Monk. The Wild World News with Dr. Henry Day.
Well, hey, do you do any schools in Bloomfield, Indiana?
Not in a while. Why do you ask that?
Well, they've had a cougar spotted down there.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I'd heard about that on the news.
The residents who live, you know, they're in southern Indiana spot where a mountain lion has been confirmed. Say they've been seeing it for years, but they finally confirmed it. Bloomfield's Hunter Supply Store owner, Tom Colvin, says he doesn't believe many of the stories, but there is a big cat somewhere out there in the woods. The state's Department of Natural Resources confirmed a cougar in rural Greene County through a May 1st photograph taken by a motion-sensitive camera. And a mountain lion was confirmed last year in the neighboring Clay County. Now, you know, the last few months we've had a lot of reports of these big cats coming into residential areas. You got any idea why all of a sudden?
Well, it's the residential areas where that happens is usually in the state of California, and everyone wants to have the beautiful deer come into their backyards, so they put out salt licks and food for the deer. Little do they know, when they invite the deer into the backyards, the mountain lions just follow them. But here in Indiana, sightings are quite rare. Well, here's when I got a kick out of the story. I saw it on the news, and the headlines was read, "Wild Mountain Lion on the Loose."
Oh, that's right, the wild mountain lion.
Yes, that just sounded so ironic. In fact, they had there's the Exotic Animal Feline Center, which is just a few miles from our compound. They had a cougar get loose about 2 years ago, and almost immediately I got a call from the local superintendent of schools for Putnam County. And we've been friends for years, and I told him, he said he was worried about the children, especially waiting on bus stops. Well, that particular mountain lion had never been imprinted by humans. It was a wild cat. Its mother had been killed in Montana. There were two cubs. The cubs were sent to the feline center in Center Point. And they had never made, I hate to use this word, they'd never made pets out of these two cats. So they were essentially wild, and one of them did manage to escape. So I told the superintendent of schools, I said, think about this. There are kids waiting on bus stops every morning in states like Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Utah, where there are significant populations of mountain lions, and there's never, ever been reported any incident, children waiting on bus stops. So he said, thank you, I know what to tell the parents when they call. So, and we haven't seen that cat. Well, it's spotted every once in a while, but they're so reclusive, even in areas where they're quite, I shouldn't say quite common, but a population of them, they're rarely ever seen, so. So it'll probably be seen from time to time, just enough to keep it in the newspapers. But I wouldn't put a chihuahua out your back door at night in those areas. We talked about a little bit about this last week with Bob Jackson, the Yellowstone Park Ranger.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, Bob was great.
Yes.
All right. Well, this is pretty exciting. We're heading off to Australia. Scientists
Good.
Are reporting the discovery of a host of new species, including a previously unknown type of long-nosed frog dubbed Pinocchio. A tiny forest wallaby may be the smallest known member of the kangaroo family, a bent-toed gecko with yellow eyes, and dozens of new insects. The environmental group Conservation International, with the support of the National Geographic Society and the Smithsonian, made the discoveries during a biological survey on the western side of New Guinea in 2008, but announced the findings just this last Monday. And they're going to do a feature on the expedition in June's National Geographic.
Wow, that's great.
That should be fun, yeah.
I can't wait to get that issue.
All right, Tampa, Florida. Now, I'm a big fan of Tampa, Florida. I worked here at Busch Gardens back in the 70s, and that's one of my favorite places in the state.
Well, now, what did you do in Busch Gardens, Doc?
Well, I worked as a pastel portrait artist and also
yeah.
did caricature cartoons.
Oh.
Actually, what I did was I worked at a place called Treetops, did cartoons, and drank beer at the hospitality house all day. That was a pretty bad job. Yeah. Well, you asked me.
You had the qualifications for that.
I saw 20,000 tourists a day.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
But anyway, it was a great job.
Oh,
but anyway, let's the Tampa, Florida, Busch Gardens, two endangered red-tailed lemurs were born at Busch Gardens Jambo Junction on April 21st. Their parents, Maditra and Boy, arrived at the zoo as babies just 3 years ago. The genders of the babies are not known yet, and when they're born, they weigh a little more than a half a pound and grow up to be 8 to 10 pounds.
Well,
and I know you're a big fan of lemurs.
I am a big fan of lemurs. We love lemurs. In fact, we have a couple ringtail lemurs that we've used in education for years.
Yeah,
and they're really.
Creatures. Yeah.
They're fascinating animals, you know. Of course, they're only found on the island of Madagascar. And, yes, they are, Henry.
All right, now here's an interesting story. Let's head out to the West Coast. Federal and state authorities began 2 days of training exercises this week at the ports throughout California. Simulations included a bomb in San Francisco Bay Harbor that a Navy Marine Mammals Sea lion took less than 1 minute to find. More than 3,000 state and local federal responders are taking part in the effort, part of the state's annual Homeland Security and Disaster Preparedness exercises. And California has like 11 ports and handles like 60% of the nation's container shipping traffic. So they're training sea lions to find bombs.
I've heard of that before.
That's pretty interesting.
In fact, we'll have to talk to Steve Chase about that, because I think even the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been involved with that to some extent. Of course, I guess they would about have to be, because I'm not certain. I'd have to look this up, but sea lions might be. I'm not sure if they're endangered or not, but haven't done a lot with sea lions, being we're a landlocked state. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Kansas. I know what that's all about.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's head off to Washington State and Idaho. Two living specimens of the fabled giant Palouse earthworm have been captured for the first time in two decades. University of Ohio scientists said Tuesday researchers located an adult 10 to 12 inches long and a juvenile 6 to 7 inches long. The worm is a near mythic creature in the Palouse region of Washington State and Idaho. The university statement said the two worms appeared to dispel reports that had added to their mystique, which were that the worms spit and that they smelled like lilies. Yeah, that was kind of my response, too. Now, this is the first I've heard of these worms, but a 12-inch worm, that's pretty impressive.
You know, there are certain parts of the country, if certain people would have discovered that worm, it would be on a hook and be used for fish bait in a matter of moments, so I'm glad scientists found that.
Yep. Bass fishing is all over the world would be.
Yep.
Running off to Washington State.
Yes, they would.
All right, well, before we get Stephen out here, let's finish it up with a local news, local story here. Indiana wildlife biologists said they have collected a record 1.5 million eggs from female huskies this spring to stock lakes statewide with the popular sport fish. All of the eggs were taken from fish netted over an 8-day period at Webster Lake in northern Indiana. Biologists extracted and fertilized more than 600,000 eggs in one day, setting a record for single day egg take. Fertilized eggs were placed in hatching jars at a northern Indiana fish hatchery and later shipped to the southwestern fish hatchery, where the muskies will mature over the summer. They'll be fed minnows and released in the fall to be stocked in lakes across the state.
Well, that's great. In fact, I was by that lake just 2 days ago. Outstanding. So is that the Wild World News for this week, Dr. Day?
Yes, I wanted to add one more thing.
Okay.
The Alphabet Swamp, your new book.
Yes, sir.
Everybody loves it.
Well, thank you. We do have our new book out, Alphabet Swamp. In fact, I've been on a book signing tour for the last week and a half to schools, and it's been crazy. We've got tremendous response. And anyone that would like to get a copy of that book can go to our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and for a $10 donation through PayPal account, I'll be more than happy to send a signed copy to whomever you want me to sign it to. We'll do it. My wife and I, Cheryl writes the book. I illustrate them. And we're very excited. We've gotten great reviews from teachers and the kids, and it's really quite exciting. So we're thrilled about our little field trip in our new kids' book called Alphabet Swamp. We want to also thank our underwriters that make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. We Want You Cottages way up in western New York at Chautauqua Lake. In fact, great resort, everybody. So if you're thinking about going on a fishing trip and you talk about muskies, Chautauqua Lake, it's full of them. And also they have a brand new website. It's called iKids Fishing, and this is where kids can take a picture of that big fish that they caught, download it on the website, and children all across the country will be comparing their fishing skills with other children in different parts of the United States. At We Want You Cottages, and that website is weewan1chu.com. So check it out. Peter Weimer, he's the proprietor, and he's the host, and he's got an outstanding place up there in western New York. Also, the magnificent McGregor Mountain Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado, It's on the boundary of Rocky Mountain National Park. Truly a beautiful park and outstanding scenery. And man, if you've never been there, take the trip. And McGregor Mountain Lodge and the cabins, that's the place to stay. And their 800 number is 1-800-835-8439. Or go to the internet, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And we'd like to thank Michael Hodge and all the fine folks at McGregor Mountain Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado. Also, a big thank you to Bass Pro Shops and the Tracker Marine Boning Center. That's down in Clarksville, Indiana. And old Dan White's in charge of the whole deal. So if you've got an itch to go fishing, of course, these Bass Pro Shops are truly amazing. They're like a museum and a store. So while Dad's checking out the fishing gear and all the new stuff to go out and catch that big bass, the children, they can go through this fantastic fish display of native fish from all over the United States, and that's at the Bass Pro Shop. It's in Clarksville, Indiana, right down there by Louisville, and that phone number is 812-218-5369, and say a big hello to Dan White. Our guest tonight is a gentleman I've known now for over 10 years. In fact, he's one of the big deals at the National Conservation Training Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. That's about an hour from Washington, D.C. Stephen Chase is a native of Connecticut, and he presently serves as the special assistant, now this is a big deal, everybody, to the director and chief financial officer of the National Conservation Training Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Steve joined the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in 1990 working on the National Wildlife Refuge System, Migratory Bird and Law Enforcement Issues in the Division of Budget. That's a big title. In 1993, he joined the staff of the National Conservation Training Center, where he worked on the design and development of this spectacular, folks, it is spectacular campus, where law enforcement, biologists, zoologists come from all over the country, and the place is amazing. It has like three hotels. It's unbelievable, and one of the big guys there is Stephen Chase with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Steve, it's good to have you here tonight.
Yeah, good to be here, Larry. How you doing?
I almost couldn't spit out all this information.
Yeah. Well, I guess the best thing to say about NCDC is words don't really do it justice until you get there and see the place. We still can't believe that we actually were able to pull it off, and it's definitely a testament to the investment that the Fish and Wildlife Service puts in its employees. And a lot of people that have visited walk around the campus, see what we do and see what we built, and say that it was a real good use of our tax dollars. And I think as a taxpayer, too, I agree with that.
Oh, totally. I mean, the first time I went to NCTC, we were invited. They have an open house there. I believe it's the third weekend in October. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah, but this time we're going on the fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, typically third or the fourth weekend in October.
And the old Wild Kingdom star, Jim Fowler, was invited to speak, and he called us up and he said, "Hey, I'm going to the National Conservation Training Center. It's about an hour from Washington, D.C., and would you bring some animals over?" I said, "Be more than happy to." And I think I arrived there. I usually get there like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning because I never leave early enough. And this place was, even at night in the dark, it was like, whoa. And the next morning when we had a chance to take a look at this spectacular facility, I mean, as you said, words do not do it justice.
Yeah, we have about 15,000 folks that come through the NCTC each year. We're the main training center for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but another part of our mission is inviting in other conservation professionals from other federal agencies, our state partners, folks that work for non-government conservation groups, and even corporate folks as well that are working on conservation issues. And we bring them all into the classroom together, and we think it provides a really rich atmosphere where people can learn from each other's viewpoints and each other's experience and hopefully figure out new solutions to the really big challenges that we face in conservation today.
I would have to say anytime I've sat in that huge dining area and had a chance to enjoy dinner in the surroundings of this spectacular place, that I've never started a conversation with someone that wasn't truly fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like everybody.
Yeah, we have folks from all over the country and all over the world that that come in to take training courses there, and we stay really full. We're always really busy, and I think it just shows how much of a need there is for the type of work that we do today.
Now, a few years back, in fact, this is one of the most interesting stories, and I want to hear every syllable about it, Steve, was when they had the Middle Eastern leaders there and our beloved President Clinton.
Yeah.
And what was all involved in setting, this was, well, you tell the story. Now, what was the actual event? What was it called? Do you recall?
Yeah, and the funny thing was that was the one thing that we've done the past 10 years or so that really wasn't conservation related, but it is a pretty funny story. Every year we do a Christmas party with the staff, and we have a staff of about 120 Fish and Wildlife Service people, and then we have about another 80 to 100 people that work as contractors, and we're all having our Christmas party, and people are all dressed up, and that year our director was dressed up like a Christmas version of Bozo the Clown, and everybody was making fun of him and having a good time, and
right.
It was like December 18th, and we look over in the doorway of the dining room, and there are these guys in suits that are standing there, so I walked over to see if we could help them out, and it turned out that they were from the State Department, and they wanted to know if they could talk to the director because they had some plans for the NCTC and wanted to talk about them right away.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that the guy worked for the Secretary of State, and he said that they decided that they wanted to bring the Syrians and the Israelis together in an attempt to forge a peace agreement between the two, and they wanted to use NCTC to do that, and that meant that the president would come, and the prime minister of Israel would come, and the foreign minister from Syria would come, and about 7 days later, that's exactly what happened. It was a very interesting experience to see how all that came together.
What was actually involved? Now, I know the Israeli, would it be the Israeli Secret Service, or what did they call their?
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember telling you this story.
Yeah.
The Israeli Secret Service boys are very, very capable, very professional, and as we were introducing ourselves to them, I stuck out my hand to the leader of their security team and said, "Hi, my name's Steve Chase," and his only response was, "We know who you are." Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I think you said that they would walk around the campus and they'd look at people, and these people had never really officially met them, and they just called them by their name.
Yeah, just about. I think they were very well briefed on everything that was going on. And I can't speak highly enough for all the professionals that did that,
uh-huh.
that worked that event. And our Secret Service guys, this event went on for several weeks in various locations, and our Secret Service folks stayed with us during that time. We got to know them, and just amazing professionals, and kind of like Fish and Wildlife Service people. And
uh-huh.
The funny thing is some of the Secret Service guys were asking about how they could get jobs with the Fish and Wildlife Service because our small group of special agents, I think we have about 250 of them across the country. That's probably what I'm told is the most desirable federal law enforcement job that you can get is working for the Fish and Wildlife Service. So even the Secret Service boys they were working to protect the president, one to work for us.
Wow. So what was President Clinton's impression of the NCTC, and how did that go?
That went great, and we actually had a chance to chat with the president, and the president agreed with us that NCTC must be a mighty nice place to work. We have a big stuffed brown bear from Alaska that we had in our Commons building at the time, and pretty much everybody that was on the staff at that time has a photograph of the president standing with that bear with a big grin on his face. So, yeah, it was a real treat to have that event there. And hasn't happened since, but you never know.
Right.
The word is out about the place, and Secretary Salazar of the current administration has been out a number of times, and the word is that he's told his colleagues in the cabinet, in the president's cabinet, about the NCTC. So we just never know when we're going to get a phone call from one of his colleagues to come up and have a meeting. So it's again, it's an amazing place. I think though one thing that can happen is you can get overwhelmed by the campus and the buildings. And what's really important though is just all the good work that goes on,
yeah,
and all the training courses to get done, because that's really what makes a difference. The campus and the buildings just set the right atmosphere for people to really be able to focus and learn new things.
Well, I know every time we come for the open house, this isn't once a year. It's open to the general public, and that it'll be the last weekend of October, I guess, this year. And I'm telling you, folks, if you live within 200 or 300 miles of the place, make the drive.
Yeah.
Enjoy the activities for the day, because the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, well, they have us. We bring animals over. We do a program in this fantastic auditorium that they have. But there's all sorts of other activities, which, to tell you the truth, Steve, I never get a chance to go out and see them because we're usually pretty busy. But what's been involved in the past, what kind of activities would people expect if they come to the training center this October?
Well, besides the training courses, which many of them, if a member of the public wants to take a class, they're welcome to register and take the class, but there's a tuition charge. But most of the courses are taken by Fish and Wildlife folks or their colleagues. But we also have a pretty cool public program that's gone on for many years now, and probably the neatest one that got things really kicked off was a program that we did with the Orion Society, which is a conservation group out of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and they published the magazine Orion. It's an award-winning magazine, fabulous writing, wonderful photography, and we worked with them to put on a millennial conference that we called Fire and Grit. And that was probably, or arguably, the greatest gathering of American nature writers that's ever taken place. And
wow,
pretty much every big nature writer of that time, 10 years ago, whether it's Peter Matheson, Barry Lopez, Wendell Berry, Rick Bass, Bill McKibben, Terry Tempest Williams, Richard Nelson, the list just goes on and on and on, and they all converged at the NCTC for a week to meet with conservation professionals and activists from all over the country. There were great speeches, there were great readings, and the event really served to bring together the non-government sector and the government sector, and really took some people that maybe looked at the federal government or what the Fish and Wildlife Service does with maybe a bit of skepticism, and we all left really good friends. And that event kicked off what we call the Conservation and Community Lecture Series that brings in prominent writers, scientists, conservationists, people like you, Larry, every month. and to talk about conservation issues. Last night, the great National Geographic adventurer John Waterman spoke about his latest adventure, where he started at the top of the Rockies and floated the Colorado River all the way to the Pacific Ocean.
Whoa.
Yeah, really cool story. You guys were talking a little while ago about sightings of mountain lions in various areas in the East. One time we had the author David Barron. Some people may recognize him as a radio guy. He used to work for NPR, and I think he's with PRI now in Boston. And he wrote a book a few years ago. You're probably familiar with it, Larry, called The Beast in the Garden.
Okay, yes, yes.
Yeah, and what that book's about is the story of Boulder, Colorado, and how they have big issues with mountain lions coming right into the urban areas.
Uh-huh.
And it's the reason they're coming down into those areas is before Boulder was a place that people lived, it was at the end of the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. It was really just an open area. And when people started living there, the trees started growing. And 100, 150 years later, the city is very wooded and a great habitat for deer. And
right.
The deer started descending down into the city, and where, like you said, where there's deer, if there's going to be mountain lions around, they know where the deer are, and they're just cruising right down into the city too. So people all of a sudden were finding their cats and dogs missing when they left them out in the backyard at night, and it's a really fascinating story and great book. So I really recommend that. We've heard of sightings here in West Virginia, Virginia area, and lots of times we hear those things, we give David a call and see if he has heard anything. But right now, it's pretty much our opinion that at least in this area, if there are sightings, they could be due to someone that maybe had a pet critter, and for one reason or another, they just let the thing go. You're better suited to talk about that than I am, I think, because how many mountain lions do you have at your place, Larry?
Well, right now we don't have any mountain lions, but okay. We've had several reports of around the area. In fact, just around the corner. So they're saying that probably now, for instance, the white-tailed deer, there's more of them now than there were 200 years ago.
Oh yeah.
Because of the habitat.
Yeah, we have a real problem. I think we're up to over 120 square mile in the area around the training center, and that's far beyond the carrying capacity of the land for that number of deer. And
it's almost like a deer.
Say again.
It's almost like a deer petting zoo at the National Conservation Training Center.
Yeah. Almost, and it's kind of embarrassing.
You could put up little feed stations, probably, and the children could feed them out of their hand if you wanted to.
Yeah, just about, and of course you wouldn't do that. But
anyway. No, you wouldn't, but anyway. Well, we're going to take go ahead.
I'm saying after the break I can fill you in on a couple of really cool events that we have coming up.
Oh, fantastic, because we want to hear about them for sure. So we're going to be back in just a few moments with Steve Chase. This is Larry Batson, everybody, and this is Larry Batson's Wild World, and you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
You don't have to be a firefighter to keep your home safe from wildland fire. Homeowners and communities play a large role in fire safety. Take simple measures, such as keeping your streets and roads clear so that fire engines can easily maneuver. make sure fire hydrants are visible and accessible. More importantly, clear flammable vegetation around structures, on large lots, and along roadsides. These simple prevention measures can go a long way toward reducing the danger of a fire to your home and community.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at nifc.gov. That's nifc.gov.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend. While many talk about these ideals, without action, they are just empty words. If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education. thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of RAD. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. Remember, if you're partying this holiday season, don't drink and drive. Got it? It's just not worth it. Doesn't make sense. Thank you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Louie.
Hey, everybody, we're here. Good to see you. When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat, heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow.
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your smoky on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everybody. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World, and we're talking to Steve Chase with the National Conservation Training Center and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We'd like to thank our underwriters, such as We Want You Cottages, way up in western New York at Chautauqua Lake. They'll be mad at me if I call it Chautauqua. But it's Chautauqua Lake. They have an exciting new website, iKids Fishing, where kids from all over the country can download photographs of their fish that they've caught and compare them to youngsters all across the country. But that's at wewantyou.com. And if you're thinking about going on that big fishing trip, you might want to check out We Want You Cottages up in western New York at Chautauqua Lake. And the Weimers are fantastic hosts. Go to their website, wewantyou.com, or give them a call the old-fashioned way, 716-789-3383. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. And if you're thinking about going to Rocky Mountain National Park, that is the place to stay. And you can call them at 1-800-835-8439 or info at mcgregormountainlodge.com. And a big, big thank you to the Bass Pro Shops down in Clarksville, Indiana, very close to Louisville, Kentucky, and the Tracker Marine Boating Center. Fantastic place. If you've never been to one of these Bass Pro Shops, make the trip. It is amazing. And while Dad's checking out the latest fishing gear, they've got mounted animals from around the world. They've got the beautiful aquarium display where you can actually, there's fish above you, beside you. It's amazing. So that's the Bass Pro Shop down in Clarksville, Indiana, and say a big hello to Dan White. And their phone number is 812-218-5369. Also, we want to remind all of our Blog Talk listeners that you can become a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World. Just submit that on the Blog Talk site, and they'll send us a little email. And welcome aboard. Be a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk. And also, every Sunday from 12 to 7, go to Radio Mom, that's radiomom.fm, and from 12 to 7 Eastern Standard Time, I host a program that has nothing to do with wildlife, but it's called The 70s on Sunday, where we play some of the music from the 70s, and the Hoosier Broadcasting Corporation is a great supporter of wildlife educational services, and they make it possible for us to continue our work in wildlife education and wild animal rescue. Our guest tonight, he probably doesn't like this title, but he's kind of the backbone of the National Conservation Training Center, along with a lot of other folks, Steve Chase. Steve, are you doing okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
We need a few more PSAs there.
Yeah.
So you're getting ready to tell us a little story that you thought we might, which I know we will find of great interest. Regarding the National Conservation.
Yeah, I was talking about that event we had 10 years ago that sparked a bunch of these great monthly speakers that we have in our public lecture series. Mm-hmm. And another thing that was sparked back at that conference back 10 years ago was the notion of trying to bring together high school kids to the NCTC in what we were calling at the time a Student Conservation Congress. And for several years we thought about it, but we were never really able to get the thing rolling. And then a couple years ago, my daughter, who goes to a school up in Pennsylvania, told me about a group up in New York City that was working with schools to help schools be greener and save energy and reduce their the amount of carbon they're putting into the environment. And they're called the Green Schools Alliance. And we were able to hook up and partner up with the Green Schools Alliance and create what we call SC3, or the Student Climate and Conservation Congress. And last year we had our inaugural session. We had over 100 kids from all over the country come in to meet with and learn from conservation leaders from around the country. People like Bobby Kennedy Jr., the great historian Douglas Brinkley, and many others were able to come up and interact with these really talented kids. And this year we're going to be doing it again at the end of June. And one of our special guests at this year's SC3 is going to be Larry Batson. So we're really looking forward to you coming out, Larry.
Oh.
And you're going to be there with folks like the writer Robert Michael Pyle, the great oceanographer Sylvia Earle, and the great writer and leader on the whole climate issue, Bill McKibben. And just to name a few, we have a really good lineup this year for the, about 120 high school kids are going to be coming in for that event. So we're looking forward to having you at that.
I am so excited to come and to anytime I can find an excuse to come over to the training center. In fact, I'll be there. Well, I'm coming to stay. I'm going on into Washington to do a little thing with the Kids Fishing Day there by the World War II Memorial, where all the kids go fishing, but they bring in the inner city Washington, and it's so much fun. I mean, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services does so many great events and so many fantastic activities. And
We think it's really important, especially now, to be able to engage youth as much as possible. And back in 06, we had an event that really sparked the movement that Richard Louv got rolling with his book, Last Child in the Woods. And just we brought together a bunch of people to talk about the fact that kids aren't growing up the same way that you and I did. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I got home from school, my mom said, get outside and play and don't come back till dinner.
Right.
And that meant we were down in the swamp or something catching frogs and doing things like that, or building forts in the woods. And today it's just not the same way. Kids are indoors. They're spending too much time on the Internet. They're spending too much time playing video games. And they just don't have the same connections to nature that we did. And we're really concerned in the Fish and Wildlife Service that if we don't find ways to engage the kids of today in the outdoors, and in another generation, we're not going to have many folks that really even care about the wildlife and about the land. And we can't let that happen.
No, no. That's our future. I mean, we have to – let's face it. We're getting a generation of youngsters now that are just plain fat because they're not getting the exercise.
So it's not only a wildlife and conservation thing; it's a public health thing.
Absolutely.
If kids are just sitting around exercising their thumbs with a Playmaker, with their PlayStation or their Xbox. They're not out active like we all used to be, and it's just a shame, and we're really hoping that we can turn that around. So the NCTC is working not only to connect, say, grade school kids with nature, but we're also really ramping up our efforts to get high school kids and college kids engaged in the outdoors by getting them involved in groups like the Youth Conservation Corps, and working with universities to make sure that university students know that if they're in school for biology or for wildlife studies, conservation studies, that the Fish and Wildlife Service is a darn good place to work, and we need them for our future.
Well, I can almost see the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service being like your NFL and your NBA, where they're actually recruiting students that are talented, resourceful, to say, hey, go after them. Say, this is what we have to offer. In fact, every day I have kids say, "Man," I says, I would like to be a veterinarian. I'd like to do your job. I'd like to be a zoologist." I say, "Go to school." I says, "Get your degrees, work hard in school, and the world is yours." And what an amazing thing to do to work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I mean, over the years that you've been, how many different places have you been, Steve?
I've worked in 3 different places, and then I've been through various developmental programs that have brought me to other sites as well. So I've worked in Washington. I've worked in 2 different places in West Virginia. I've served on detail in the National Wildlife Refuge System and also in one of our regional offices. The neat thing about the Fish and Wildlife Service is that we're a small agency. We only have about 8,000 employees, where a place like the Park Service has 25,000. And, you know, when I was growing up, me and all my friends wanted to work for National Park Service, and we thought that would be the cool job, to be a park ranger. And nothing against Park Service. We have great friends at the Park Service, and they do an incredible job. But Fish and Wildlife Service is where it's at. We're like a big family, and the NCTC is the home of the Fish and Wildlife Service. And you just, obviously, you can't know all 8,000 people, but you really get to know people all over the country, and they're coming into the NCTC, and it's a place where you always see someone that you know from somewhere in the service. And I think that's a really good thing, and it's a unique thing in government for people to treat the organization they work for like a big family.
It is a big family. And of all, besides the National Conservation Training Center, what has been your favorite location to do your job?
Well, I spent some time working over at Cape May National Wildlife Refuge in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and that was a blast. There, you think of the Jersey Shore as a very built-up place, but the refuge has some of the last remaining wild beach areas, and it also even has some virgin white cedar forests that no one would really know are there, and so some really spectacular habitat, despite the fact that you're in South Jersey, that you know you would envision as being very built up and not really suited for a national wildlife refuge, but can't be further from the truth. Really neat place. I'm an outdoors person, and I spent my whole younger years working outside. And my first job in the service was in the city, and I mean, you could drop me in the woods with a Bic lighter and I'd be just fine, find my way out. But that first week or two working in downtown Washington, D.C., when I had to walk up 18th Street at night, it was pretty spooky. Took me a while to get used to that.
That is scary.
Yeah.
I'd rather camp among grizzly bears.
Yeah, right. You know, something else I wanted to bring up was we did a really great show with you recently that really sparked a lot of people talking all around the world, and that was the Bigfoot program that you did.
Yeah.
And I think it was pretty neat that we were able to bring you in. And, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service is not going to officially come out and say that they would agree that there's the existence of that critter, but we were able to, at the beginning of your program, to bring out an old memo that was written that said when we get that proof that we all want, that the service was ready to do whatever is necessary to make sure a critter like that would be protected. So I thought that was a real blast. And,
there was quite a bit of response from that, wasn't there?
Yeah, there really was. So that was fun. Another thing that we're doing that's really engaging a lot of people is the fact that about 5-6 years ago, a young pair of bald eagles decided that they would build a nest literally 200 yards from one of our buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And first year they tried to build a nest. They didn't do a very good job. They weren't successful. But the next year they were, and they were able to fledge one Young Bald Eagle. And from then on, it's been just an incredible success story. And we were able to put a web camera up right over the nest. And an incredible community, a global community, has started up all about that eagle nest. And
are the chicks?
Right. This year we've got one. They've had 2 years in the past where they've had actually fledged three, but we all know what the winter was like on the East Coast this year, especially in the Mid-Atlantic, and we got about 60 inches of snow in a 10-day period, and unfortunately they laid four eggs this year, but only one of them was viable. But if folks want to check out that Eagle Cam, they can go to eaglecam.blogspot.com, and that'll get you to both a still camera and a live feed that we're in partnership with the Outdoor Channel. They're providing us this year with plenty of bandwidth, so lots and lots of people can watch live video with audio of the critters. And we're looking at about June 20th to June 25th for the first flight of the young eagle that's in the nest now. And
it's
a thrill.
It's still in the nest.
Yeah, it's still in the nest. It's still growing its feathers. And based on the years past and based on the literature about how long it takes from the hatch until they fledge, we're thinking it's going to be between the 20th and the 25th of June. And there's a whole community of people that are literally watching that cam 24 hours a day, watching that bird. And
isn't
watching
that amazing?
The two adults. And, yeah, it really is. And people that you wouldn't really expect would be into wildlife have really gotten engaged in it and are very, very protective of those birds, as we all should be.
We have a nest just down the road from our home and compound here, and it is amazing. There's gravel trucks that blast down this road right next to it, practically. And there'll be several cars parked there watching, and it doesn't bother the eagles at all. They seem completely superficial to it. In fact, I've sat down, and I'll tell you what, there's nothing cooler than watching those chicks just barely hanging their head out of that nest, and mom's sitting there, and then old dad comes in with those wings up and that incredible cry it's breathtaking.
Yeah, it really is. And then our nest is only about, I'd say, 300 or 400 yards from the Potomac River, and there is some darn good fishing down there, and those birds are bringing in some big fish. And you know, people sometimes worry if there's three eaglets in the nest, that maybe the youngest eaglet might not get the food. And the funny thing is, these adult eagles know exactly how to deal with them, and they'll take the oldest one, and they will give it enough food till it's completely gorged and lying on its back, unable to move. And then they'll feed the next one till that one's so stuffed it can't move, and then the littlest one gets all the food that he wants. So
wow!
Not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing.
Man,
I'm sorry. Could I get that address again? Somebody in the chat room wanted that address.
Oh, sure. We have a blog, and that's a good gateway to get into the website with the cam. And it's eaglecam.blogspot.com.
Okay, great.
Well, that's outstanding. In fact, I've sat in the lobby. Well, in the rooms, it's on the television.
It's really neat. It's on the closed circuit, and I know we don't have much time left, but the cam went down in December, and we had to really scramble to get a new cam up there, and we did it literally with only a day or two to spare. And
wow.
It's worked out well. And
Steve.
To have them.
Well, it's been great having you on. I'd like to invite you on again in the future and hear about all the new activity at National Conservation Training Center.
Yeah, it's been great to be on, Larry, and I wish you guys the best, and thank you for all the really good work that you and Cheryl do. You're really a role model for all of us.
Well, I appreciate that. We love everybody at the National Conservation Training Center, and to us, that's like a second home to us. I want to thank Henry May for his technical expertise and also Dr. Henry Day for the Wild World News. Always a fantastic job. Next week on the show, everybody, this is for the locals. This is going to be a treat for me. Cowboy Bob Glaze, and he's going to talk about his adventures down the Caribbean, scuba diving, also raising money for the local Humane Society down there in Antigua. So we'll be talking to Bob Glaze next week here on Larry Batson's Wild World. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.